magnesium unconsciously.
Right.
Did you miss the whole book?
Manganese is a magnetic
one. Yeah, because calcium cannot punch muscles too.
Oh, did you learn that so fast?
Like in
see, your own mouth will condemn you.
Homeopathic or allopathic.
Don't be and too fast to be carried away with your data, because you'll always get fooled into it. Nature does not have
logic.
No 100% anything. She'll pull you out from under it to show you everything is a 99er. So, 99% of the time you're going to act as a man, or you're going to act as a woman. 1% you're going to act as a what, a jerk? The opposite. Because while you're a sperm ovum, you're not two sperms, you're not two ovums. So therefore, the minerals are set to interact. The Chinese people can call it yin-yang. And when you put the yin and the yang together, you get a yang. You may not want it, though. That's the whole problem. You need yin-yangers. You get hung up in the yang. But that's what we're talking about. You can't make a correct 100% anything. The nature don't do that. So the clock, though it is set from 9 o'clock to 9 a.m. to operate the two basic minerals, manganese and potassium, only within a certain time frame the two come together as a husband and wife. In another time frame they separate as two, but each will go their own way.
Mm-hmm.
But they're operating within a spectrum of 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the same phenomena going on in you, and when you feel stressed out and you don't understand why the other person is away, look at the clock and you'll find out pretty fast which element is off. Then you can go take a food, put it in and balance it. Because that's the element that has to be balanced back at that particular time frame. And you only got two conditions to throw your health off, or what you call your balance off. Too fast or too slow, right or wrong?
Right.
You can't go any other way. There's no other way to go, because you're dealing with a momentum toward time.
Mm-hmm.
And the mineral will get blamed, but in actuality, it's not the mineral's fault. It's the timing, when you put it in. So if you eat a food at the wrong time, the mineral will either be what, a cooperative guest or a non-cooperative guest to cause the problem.
Eat it at the wrong time?
Yeah, at the wrong time.
Non-cooperative.
So that's what we're trying to establish, that it can only affect you if it's the wrong time for that mineral to go in.
Just
got that mineral?
Just warehouses.
No?
Warehouses, right? Just in the warehouses.
Your warehouse in your body, my friend, is your DNA. And your allied delivery van is your RNA. And it's going from one organ to the other organ on time, otherwise you muck up. So, this society runs on the 18-wheelers now. Let those guys go and deliver and see what the heck you do with your telephone. You're calling and yelling at the other end of the line to tell the jerk to deliver his stuff, right or wrong. Now, years ago they used to say the postman had the right to go through first, right? Does he still got that right?
Probably the UPS man now
he
got that right.
Nah, the extra dollar you pay for delivery. Give them the right to go through first, so you find out who's running the show.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy.
Now, you know the minerals, they're set up, right? The host, the monitor, and the guest. We have three gases. Hydrogen. What does it do inside of you? Hydrogen generates your desire. You don't have a single thing called desire inside of you if you don't have hydrogen. The moment you take hydrogen, you got desire. Now you can't get rid of hydrogen no matter how you try. Simply because you're 80% what?
H2O.
Good. So that's how many hydrogen?
Two.
Oh.
Two parts.
See how you were made to desire, but you are made to own?
Mm-hmm.
Does hydrogen generate desire, or is it desire?
No. A gas produces a phenomenon.
Phenomenon.
It isn't a phenomenon. It produces a phenomenon. And the phenomenon has to do with the ignition reaction. So hydrogen comes into you, is already inside of you as a liquid, producing this phenomenon called craving or desire in you. You don't have a craving when you're sound asleep. When you went to bed last night, when you were sound asleep, did you know if you're a man or a woman?
Hmm? I was an amoeba.
But when you went to bed last night, didn't you tell yourself you're going to wake up this morning to go to hear a Donald Coffee ship? Right? So that's what the craving is. You're asleep, or hydrogen did it to you. Just about you said last night you're going to go sleep and shut your eyes for a few minutes. And you think you're talking. So they refuse to trust even the owner. They're making it possible now that everything is recorded. I would pick it off the shelf. The shelf will do the recording. This object can be removed. The record was missing. And they put it back, it'll record back. So this is exactly what's going to happen. The shells are going to do the compound, and the magnetism box, the chemical, the cash box, will do a recording. So you can't even walk on the store and say you didn't pay for it. That's where we put ourselves in our own predicament. But, that's, again, individuals in their own thinking. So oxygen gives you the consciousness. Nitrogen gives you the willpower to stick things out. And hydrogen gives you the desire. And carbon dioxide is a waste gas. It comes after you breathe, not before you breathe. So you can fart after you take your first breath. You can burp after you take your first breath.
But not there's no farting
until then, huh? Your fish fart? After the cord is cut and you take your breath, then you can fart. Not before. You try as you like, your body ain't gonna do it. You'll bubble up through your mouth, like a champagne bottle. But you'll never fart till you breathe through your nostrils, when the bottles are open.
In the Bahamas, when the fish fart, you can hear it very distinctly, very loud.
So, there it is, right there in your nostrils, set up for you to function. Once you understand it, then knowing that you're not locked into all this charades that society is functioning with, you know for sure what's going on. Carbon dioxide now is called CD. C is for the constructive use of carbon dioxide. It will preserve you from breaking down once it's regulated. It will destroy you if you don't know how to regulate it. What do you keep your food in after you take it out and serve us and put it back in? What do you call that? What do you call it?
Refrigerator.
What?
Refrigerator.
Oh, and what do you use to refrigerate it?
Hmm? A condenser.
It takes
the heat out.
What kind of gas do you use in there?
Chlorine.
Man, if your mother nature didn't make your ass over to freeze you up before your ship, you would have been dead a long time. Your own nose and your own body is designed to cellular refrigerate you. We only copying it, and the guy that never refrigerated came along to copy the unit, and so what we got? Units to what? Ice been falling when the grammar been made by Mother Nature centuries before we ever found out. Water falling from the sky, called rain, frozen by the environment. We chop it up or what? We got a fish to eat for next year? Mm-hmm. No, we can't carry the ice along with us because it's too big. So we invented what? A mechanical ketchup.
And then we found it.
And that's what the body is, carbon dioxide. Inside you has this capacity. All our instruments can be now made to duplicate.
So what is the difference between the accumulation of carbon dioxide, which is signified by a farmer or something that's known as a regen, and a carbon dioxide that will refrigerate you and stabilize you for immortality?
Ever defrost your refrigerator?
No, you already just said you have the answer right there. Then somebody said, Halpa!
You fail to do this. Hurt the urea. You put it on the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Then are you temporarily traumatized or temporarily refrigerated? Hi, Pam. I'm glad you sent that thing over. We are very appreciative of your generosity. How do you do now? You freeze up or you cook? Or you boil over? You do what? You see, your temperature control in terms of it becomes what? An asset or a deficit. So when you bubble up now, it's the same carbon dioxide, making you sound like champagne. When you cool down, you're feeling like a piece of ice. All right. But the same voice that said, hi, Pam. But what they say after hi, Pam is what makes you freeze or you cook. If you are appreciated for whatever you've done, you're going to bubble up and feel like you're cooking. If you feel lousy for whatever you've done, you're going to feel frozen. Do you see what the brain...
So you're saying your own
self-regulating
temperature. You have to be regulating the temperature of tea to
distribute
the carbon dioxide.
Yes.
So
that's not a human idea. Now, nobody does it to you but to yourself. So your best cure against anyone trying to freeze you or cook you is to do what?
Change your breath.
No. In yoga, they say you must be master of your emotions. What pose is that? Lie on or lie off? Lie on to yourself or lie on yourself? Let your go in now. King of your emotions? King of the beast in you? So what do you do? Stick it on and laugh? Or you accept yourself as a mirror? Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the youngest of them all? Ugliest of them all. We always want to know who is the nicest of them all. You don't want to know who is the youngest?
And then you open your eyes.
Yeah. Your mouth, in reference to the static, triggers the carbon dioxide to either cool it down or fall it. So temperature relationship is set up to construct or break up in the carbon dioxide.
So you have to pick
it up
more emotionally.
Congratulations. Now you understand.
But then there's another says, you should not ever allow yourself to be depressed.
So he said, the best medicine is crazy, but you get hot. Then you laugh, right? You never get cool and you laugh. So he says, it only takes two muscles to laugh. It takes 40 muscles to frown. And it's cheap if you can't laugh by yourself, a pair of toothpicks and profit yourself. You are not
special. I was
going to
say, but not
too
warm.
Correct. So there again, there are the extremes and you can't be too warm or too cold. You have to stay functional. And you notice what you're saying to this, yourself in the end is a hypo or a hyperfunction in transportation. So anytime you have a breakdown in the body, you can always go back to the fundamental function of something too fast or too slow. So your hydrogen regulates your desire. Your nitrogen regulates your willpower to stick it out. And your oxygen allows you to be conscious, to recognize, don't make it smart. And the carbon dioxide allows you to hang around or phase out.
That's what laughter takes, the saturated fat and unsaturated.
Congratulations. Biothermal reaction is an emulsifier.
That's what cleans your lungs out.
Good.
No, not me.
I got one more thing now. and that is this particular word.
And I'm not just use you people can tell me what it means to you.
Minerals have a function, they don't.
Shunt means to go around, pass through, but not pick up, like the venous blood shunts through the lungs and it doesn't pick up oxygen, it might give off carbon dioxide, and it might not even give off carbon dioxide. So your arterial blood goes up and there's less amounts of oxygen, greater amounts of carbon dioxide, you've got big problems. Call it shunt, and it can be calculated.
Anything else, sir? Anybody else? That's good, sir. Maybe I've got to argue. Keep going. What's the shunt for? Minerals have a power to do shunting. But
the pressure release is shunting. It shunts in the brain for brain trauma and allows
pressure to pack. Keep talking, I'm listening.
Shoe nut. Not. It can't go. She not go. Can't put it away. It'll stay.
Drain out the overload.
Good. Keep going. You got any more? Push on.
Diverter. Valve.
Good. Anything else? Right.
I thought when you shut the system, it actually blocked its path and rerouted it.
Congratulations. Keep talking, Lorna. You hear it. You're getting on the ball.
Don't you send it back down the way it came up?
Keep talking.
That's all I know.
What good is a bulletproof vest to the person in front of it?
The person in front of it or the person wearing it?
Oh, I see. To the person is very important, not the one in front, right?
Well, that's the other one in front.
Oh, I see now. The one in behind it will do what?
Protect it.
Good, and that's what a shunt is. All it does, protects. You have four organs set up by the clock in your body to protect other organs from breakdown.
Kidneys would be one and heart would be one.
And you read the clock this way.
Lungs also. And intestine, I guess they do the four.
And the first one is from 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. and operates in two color spectrums.
Red and black.
Red and white. And that's a large intestine operating in two colors, one R for each color. And it's very easy to recognize because they've always got to have 2 hours and they break up into two colors. The ascending color is white in the large intestine and the descending color is the red. And the large intestine will act as a shunt. For the lungs against the stomach.
So the large intestine will act as a shunt?
For your lungs against the stomach. So when you're dying from eating too much and you don't go shit, you will find out your lungs are going to run out on you and then you'll bury you. Because your colon is clogged up. So they say cleanliness is next to godliness and godliness is life and breath. So you got to clean up your belly button in order to eat more. So nature done set it up already. That we begin our misery in our stomach and our mouth, and we clog up our large intestine, and before you know it, we're breathing heavy, and we don't get enough oxygen.
I'm breathing heavy.
Especially with mucus. So this here is a shunt for the lungs. The large intestine is your shunt for your lungs. So you need to do spring cleaning when spring comes around. And so if you're constipated, you know what is necessary. Now, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., the heart is the next shunt. It's in the orange and the yellow. And the heart protects the spleen from the what?
small intestine.
Small intestine. So all the crap that is left in your small intestine from the many years of eating, your heart will take it, but then if your heart lets you down, what time of the day it usually does that?
You said 7, the heart usually runs out about 7 p.m. actually. I think 7 is the time of the day.
What time do you think your heart lets you down?
11 to 1.
11 to 1. You always hear the person go into a restaurant, eat a big meal and fall over. And then when you look at what he ate, he's a fudgy belly, well fed.
You're right.
A heart transplant is not a heart attack. The heart gave out now, and it didn't act as it shunt between 1 o'clock.
You know, this
so the small intestine overloaded the heart gave out.
This brings a question. With Buddha and that big belly, what's the correlation there?
You need to call me.
Well, tell me, Buddha
too many
didn't
people.
Have a big belly. You're thinking of another Buddha.
I know what you're talking about, and I know what you asked, the question she asked. The Chinese are very smart people. They took that design to tell you, don't be like that, otherwise they'll bury you. And they put it in the place where food is served. You'll never find it in a temple. They call it the Laughing Buddha.
Chinese.
Yeah, they don't put it in no temple. You'll find the other kind of Buddha like this at a temple. Mm-hmm. Very athletic looking. What I want to stand up like this. He's at a restaurant. He's telling you, don't come and muck yourself up. Or else they'll bury you with a fat gut. Yeah, that's
what you do it for luck. You rub his belly because you're lucky. It's not you.
Right. That's what I do. I said, thank you, man. I dare you. I'm gonna get there. I was there before. So the pot belly is their way of telling you not to be like that. Be short when you eat. Don't get into a pot belly state. So that's what laughing. So the shunt organ in the middle of the day is the heart or the spleen against the small intestine. Yeah.
If someone has a heart attack, it seems to be a heart attack at stomach time?
A heart attack at stomach time?
Uh-huh. Someone told me about that, and I said, the first thing I thought was that pericardium was straight across. And just, you know,
a heart attack at stomach time?
Uh-huh.
Think of what you're saying, you know, my stomach is vent to vent.
5 to 7?
Your stomach, what time is that?
5.
Look at your clock.
7 to 9.
7 to 9, you get an attack at that time, you're not going to get it in your heart, friend.
They probably
have
gas.
I know that, and you're not going to get it in your heart because what? You'll get it right here. You're never going to hear it?
Yeah, that's what they teach.
That's interesting. In fact, this point is both a point for a heart attack and for stomach ulcers. You'll feel it sore in the same place.
That.
You can misinterpret both.
It's always misinterpreted.
Heart attack usually is the arm, so it goes over the neck.
You'll get it here. You'll never get it here. You'll get it here.
Is there anything associated with pericardium that is actually heart-related?
Your pericardium is what time?
9:02. 7. The opposite of stomach.
Anytime you get an attack in your pericardium, friend, you have a problem with your boyfriend or the opposite sex?
So, stomach time
would
have nothing to do sending across from
pericardium.
So it would have to happen
in the time. No, because then you get a pericardium attack, it's going to be between 7 and 9 o'clock in the evening. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, somebody that you are communicating with pissed you off.
Yeah,
and you like to give them a good shove in their face. Mm-hmm. But hardly you find too many pericardium attacks. It's always more of a thyroid attack.
Your gallbladder too.
Right. But the pericardium is very rare because why? You more or less can patch it up.
Okay.
you can handle it better. But you can't handle the thyroid and the gallbladder to bury you. So the pericardium will let you down in a heart transplant.
Because it's
this? The small intestine puts the load on the heart in the middle of the day. That's your ulcers. And your heart attacks. So you're always going to be what? Monkey eating. And you go find these guys around 11, 12 o'clock, what? Gorging up in all kind of combination, then they can't come. And if you got a pain in this area, you got ulcers.
That's at 1:30.
If you have a heart transplant, your kidney is going to be the shunt over here. It has two colors. Green and blue. And it's going to let you down in a heart transplant. Because why? The heart was removed from the pericardium sac. And the transplant that is put in is not matching the same frequency, so the pericardium is going to overload now the kidney, and the kidney can't hold the load. It's the dialysis machine will shut down, and it'll be back there at 6 o'clock going on to 7 o'clock in the evening. The patient had a beautiful heart transplant but died from what? Kidney failure. And it's all due to what? The pericardium not harmonically bonding with the new implant heart. The overload is too much. So if you say you have a pericardium overload, kidney will give up. But again, the real problem is not the heart. The real problem is that they're not bonding together. Now, between 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock, and that's in the indigo and violet, we run into the gallbladder. 9 times out of 10, a person having a gallbladder attack will feel the pressure coming from here towards the heart. And they'll fall over. 9 times out of 10, by the time anyone gets to them, and get any medical attention, and by the time they pump the oxygen into their nostril or their mouth, they'll find that the patient is not responding, and they'll rush them to the hospital as fast as they can get them there. You, the relative of that person, may be breaking all the rules of the traffic to keep up with the ambulance to arrive at the hospital in order to hear the verdict. And when the doctor comes out after they have studied the patient, they'll come to you in very nice terms and says, are you the relative? Close relative? Yeah. I'm sorry to say that the person did not survive the attack. They were DOE. We will make all necessary forms for you. Check in our office tomorrow. But they may have to go through an autopsy just to satisfy the city.
We'll charge you more than the funeral.
I know that. I've been through it many times, I should know. Now, when the man arrives at his ambulance, and they go to the patient that has a heart, gallbladder attack at night, that's a gallbladder attack, thinking it's a heart attack, they normally try to give him oxygen. And so he dies from the oxygen.
Yeah.
So, therefore, we know now it backfired.
What should they have? What should they have
to do? This technique, you know, is not for the ambulance people, because it will be violating their training.
Have them rebreathe CO2?
A little.
A little in a bag, just put a paper bag over their head and have
it. That's right. And
then we do that in respiratory when someone has hiccups. Really,
and then you give them the oxygen after that.
Donald, I've been working with heart patients for years. Post heart, you know, once had the CABG patients, coronary artery bypass. And a lot of them get really
some
bad hiccups and they can't stop hiccups.
Some years ago.
Why? Right. Do you know why?
And what we can do? They got too much gas in their tummy.
Why, they just can't seem to stop.
See, they don't know how to do this. Squeeze your nose and shoot the gas the opposite way.
Man. Oh, command performance.
Let's see you do it again. Are you used to it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the pumpery charges.
I got a question. There's a term paper on the Buddha. I read that his respirations, he didn't breathe much. I also read that he ate and that poked sticks through his body. He got so thin. And I also read that he ate one seed a month. Was it an almond seed? Did he do that? Was it almond?
Who did that?
I read Gautama Buddha. I did a term paper on it. And I read that he ate a seed one time a month. And that's all he lived on. I read it.
It proved that he survived what?
Well, he survived through thick and thin. He did that in Kikimana Yoga. I mean, he was a gutsy little thing, you know. I mean, he was really gutsy.
Now, listen to you say it, because how did Gautama Buddha die?
Die?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if he did die.
So Gautama Buddha.
Wasn't he poisoned?
Seed poisoned.
Hmm? Didn't somebody poison
no,
him?
No, of course. He did?
Yeah, so see what I did. Said that he was a realized person. He said, I don't really test him, so he brought him some food, knowing the poison in it. Gautama knew. He knew. And he smiled when he saw him coming with the food. That disciple, Achanto, asked him, Master, why the joy in the face? And Buddha smiled again. And when he brought the food, his cousin bringing the food, he deliberately took the poison one. And picked it up as to say, he ain't got no understanding, he ain't got no knowledge, he's dumb and stupid, and people only worship him because they believe that was to fool their cousin. And he put it in his mouth, at it like that, and sit down and closed his eyes. Never opened them again.
Why did he do that?
He never rot. He freaked out the cousin. The cousin gave him powerful poison. He deliberately put it in his mouth. Shut it down.
Exactly.
So they took the body and did what? Kept it and then put gold over it and preserved it.
They still have
it.
The body?
Oh, yes.
Where?
In Tibet.
Which part?
It's one of the many gold.
Yeah, one of the temples in Tibet.
Yeah. One of them, yeah.
In Lhasa.
I know that, but the thing about it is, that's really interesting. Do you think the one seed that he did eat was maybe an almond when he was just eating one?
He didn't really have to eat, did he?
Huh?
No.
He didn't really have to eat.
No, he didn't have. He was doing these things to satisfy his students.
Oh, I see.
He did it to satisfy his students, and many of his students were doubtful of these things, so he had to do something to satisfy them. But the last thing was his own cousin, who deliberately poisoned him to see. But he took the food, knowing fully what was in the editor. But he left him and them all with the realization, you fool yourself, you had your chance, and this is it. And he didn't die. Right. Then, from then on, they decided to have a form of a service where the Buddha will always come back. And they will have this kind of a program to be in, where the things that the Buddha pondered, if he would come back within 1 year, 2 years time. Any baby that was found in the area within a certain time frame, a male baby,
the monks would go out and look for a baby born in up to 2 years, and then they find the baby, and it has to be a boy, and it's in the time, and they would have left the body.
Not gunslinger. I mean,
and they would put the object in front of the baby or boy. And it's a sequence of how he picks up the pieces and put it out. That will tell them
the last picture
that you put out and it came back to that body. And so it has been done from the time Gautama left the body. That particular ceremony is done like a picture. The picture process of these objects, how they are constantly picked up. And during the entire life of the Lama, he would always pick it up in that sequence. And then he decides to leave the body, and the body again comes back as a new being, that is the test they do. So, now the Vatican has a similar thing up to Pope Irene. Every pope before Pope Irene had to have the stigmata wounds on their bodies. And the real stigmata wounds are not in the palm, they're in the wrist. And when they formed the Vatican to riot by the Medici family, it was no longer used the way by the stigmata wound. So the Pope Irene died, he didn't have the stigmata wound, but he was selected by a political combine.
The Borgias and the
Borgias, right. And they made him Pope. From that moment on, only the stigmata wounds would appear on peasants as a contrast, and nobody could vouch for the Pope. So the Pope, when Irene passed on, they couldn't get another Pope. They had to wait. So for 3 days they were in mourning and burning all kinds of incense, and it's on the forehead of the Pope. The initial of the next Pope appears, one of the 12 names of the 12 disciples. And it begins with the first letter of the name. It appears like a welt on the forehead. And
like in Gorbachev.
And what happens is this, that when that appears,
he doesn't know it.
They would identify that person in order of the age. So they got 20 people all having the name of Mark or Matthew or James. So out of that, if there are four of them with J, the oldest James, the oldest John is selected because it's in order of the age.
That's just the thing that should be very accurate.
Well, that's the way they had to compensate the Christian church. But in the meantime,
because it's the initial of Dan Coyle.
The stigmata wound appears in two conditions. The icon level, or what is made in Christ or made by Christ. If it's made by Christ, that is the person will one day have the stigmata wounds on the right location. In the wrist, ankle, the wound in the leg. That's made by Christ. And they know that Jesus actually appeared to that person and stamped them, like a rubber stamp. Now, made in Christ, is the stigmata wounds are in the wrist. No, it's in the palm of the hand. That's the funny thing. It's in the palm of the hand, another location. They are made in Christ. They're not made by Christ. So the Vatican decided to prove out or check out to see if they can sort it out. And therefore, they have prayers and they go through. And if the person will perform any miracle, they will not accept, no miracle canonize that person unless the person is dead. So they can perform miracles while they're alive, they will not be accepted. When they die, two miracles are expected to guarantee the canonization. Made in Christ or made by Christ. And it must be situations where no doctor can correct. And so therefore, today now, stigmata wounds appear on people in two locations, in the palm of the hand or in the wrist. And the canonization goes on, and they identify them as made in or made by. And two miracles must occur after the death of the individual to guarantee the canonization. This is their way of compensating themselves. But a pope is selected every time, shuts down. And 3 days after, they burn all the incense and everything, the wound on the head, like a welt, appears with the name of the next pope. They do not get the stigmata wound no more. This is because they refuse to
recognize the traditional heritage, and they went to be political in setting up the Vatican. That's their compensation.
But why does the Buddha have to be a male baby?
He doesn't have to be.
But why is it? I mean, that's just, they're only going to pick a male?
They are told to look for a baby born within that period and bring it within the 2-year span.
But how do they know they're reincarnated?
It doesn't matter. They'll find, if they find a boy or a girl, they'll bring it.
You said a boy.
But the majority of them is required to take a boy because that's what Buddha is. He was a man.
Madhija is the female counterpart.
They have also female Buddhists, you know, that are doing these things.
I know, but why should the Dalai Lama have to be a male? How do you know he's not going to reincarnate as a woman?
Just name some heavy duty enlightened females down through history that have given teachings and not putting them down.
If they find a female, they'll bring her and put her there to take the test.
More iron, I guess.
9 times out of 10, they don't find a female baby born at that time. It's usually a male baby born at that time. That's where they're from. But if they find a female baby born within that time, they'll take it and test it. Now, the newest one that they found is not a Tibetan, you know. It's an Italian boy. The newest Buddha they found.
How can they have another Buddha if they have another Buddha? Are they just for a different order?
Yes.
So they choose the Dalai Lama.
Spaghetti order.
Spaghetti Buddha.
Now, let's continue and finish up. The Shantorgan is your gallbladder, your large intestine, your heart, and your kidney. They are your Shantorgans. And you must keep them clean. And nature has set them up in certain temperature range or seasons. So in the spring season, you clean your large intestine out. You can give yourself a lower body evacuation service. Or in the summertime, you can clean the heart up. And the best thing for the heart is tomato juice with blackstrap molasses. So you don't have to worry about wearing or cleaning your heart, because that automatically reinforces your heart.
Havana. How does that compare to the wine with the rose in it?
That's good too. But if you try to promote wine and rose, they'll tell me that Adana, you're promoting what?
Alcoholism.
I don't want to be accused for saying it, but I'll do it myself, but not you. If you want to join me, fine. But I don't want to say that I'm promoting it to you. But it's there available. That doesn't say it's not available. As long as you know them, yeah.
Why do women have candida? Say that they can't even have the molasses because it promotes that.
You know of any woman that comes to a therapy living on salt and sour? 9 times out of 10 that comes to me with a candida situation and living on a what? Good. That's why they call them candida. When they start eating their umeboshi plum and their salt pickle and everything, you think they get candida? But they don't like it, because why?
So,
who likes to eat something sour?
I do.
9 times out of 10, between the man and the woman, which one wants the sour stuff?
Men.
Mm. And the women will say the only reason they're eating it is because they're sour
pregnant.
Out of life.
Yeah, or when they're lunar.
When they're pregnant, they eat sour pickles.
Lunar nutrition, yeah.
Then a woman will eat sour, and then she never had the problem. That's the funny joke. But because why? We tend to what? Cater the sweetness of the woman so she what?
So keep rolling.
Did they get their mag? Well, thank you.
They get their magnesium. No apple cider vinegar, no burr, yeast, all the
night dinner. So the point, what is more important, is that in the morning there are certain foods that are salt, tea, sour, bitter, sweet. I need a little of each. And in the middle of the day, you got the same phenomena. Nature put them there, salt, sour, and sweet. And bitter. At night time, she did the same. So if you don't put in a little of them, you end up having a what? An overloading of the body. Now, 9 times out of 10, and I'm going to pin you down, and the person who tells me they have candida, they're traumatized. Because you can pinpoint the trauma before the candida showed up,
and then you know why they crave the sweet substance. You can't be out of sync with your body at no time unless you're traumatized. That's facts. And the trauma will make you go fast or slow. Now, if you're traumatized, you're going to be one of two conditions. Either a male person, primarily the father first, or your mother, which is primarily the female person, that'll aggravate you to throw your synchronicity off.
Alcohol or two forms of sleep.
But don't blame your parents for being lousy. They were designed to take that route to develop your immunity in you if you stick it out. And if you stick it out, you'll come out healthier, and you'll love your parents for having provided the opportunity. But if you feel aggravated, resentful, you may end up the loser. But they don't tell you that's how they came out to work. It's only because nature pushing them to act that role that you feel stressed out. But if you don't feel stressed out from it, even though it may seem miserable, you'll come out the winner in the end. Why? There's a statement that goes, honor thy parents. He didn't say what? Overlove them. He said, honor them, right? There's a vast difference between honor and overloving them. That thou may live long in the land the Lord hath given thee. Now listen to the statement and see where you fit into the picture. Why, if your parents may be aggravating to you, and you don't let it bug you, what you reap? Longevity?
Longevity.
Thank you. You reap longevity. You will stick it on it and laugh. Ha ha, Daddy, I know I'm going to make it. I'm a winner. You threw me out without my consent and I can't turn and go back up your balls. But anyway, I'll make it down the road in my own sweet energy. Right? And Mama, you throw me out. They cut the cord and I can't tell you not to do it. Well, I'm a winner because I'm breathing. And even if you know you make it miserable for me, still breathing. And now that I'm breathing, I'm the winner. Because you can't breathe to me.
Is that how you honor your parents?
I honor them by saying, you can't breathe to me. So I love you for giving me the chance to be my own driver of my own car.
Baby, you can drive my car.
So, when they see you like that, and you're in phase in love and you're stressed out, you know something? They are the first ones in the end to make reconciliation to you. Because why?
when they see you down and...
When they see you coping with their frustrations and you won't be stressed out by it, they start making reconciliation.
They wonder how you did it.
That's right.
And they want to learn.
That is right, because you blew their cool. They try every trick in the book, and they're forced to try every trick in the book without even knowing why they're trying.
Jesus said your own enemies will be those of your own family. Remember
congratulations, I love him.
Yeah, he says, I came not to send peace, but a sword that a man might decide.
Now listen to your own Jesus, he's telling you what? He's telling you you're going to have a shitty, hard-headed, bullshitting type of a game. But if you stick it out, you're coming out on top of the ball game. Why?
You're a winner.
But you've got to understand it and not freak out from it. You've got to be able to cope with it and not feel stressed out from it. And then, the very person who try every trick in the book is supposed to do what? Back off. When it back off, they respect you for two things. How in the hell can you put up with every trick in the book I try to make you feel miserable? And what is it?
But Donald, this is exactly what I've been going through. I mean, I couldn't even begin to tell you. I mean, this has been really intense. If I could turn it off, like a radio, I'm on my vacation in the middle of a beautiful area, and I can't turn off.
You know something, buddy? Could be worse.
Oh, yeah, certainly, yeah.
Enjoy it.
It did get me, you know. But
enjoy the immunization process set up by parents to get you strong and healthy, because if they take it away from you, you had it. You got a bum deal then. I'd rather be harassed and win than not to be harassed. No pain, no gain.
So in other words, parents who just make it easy for their kids, pay their rent, and love them all the time.
I thank you, Daddy.
I mean, I don't really like people. I don't really relate to people who aren't self-sufficient. Don't worry.
Yeah, I got to thank my daddy.
Throw
me out and tell me, go for it. I can't go back inside of him, so I have to go for it and I'm breathing.
So my dad did.
That's the whole idea. Anyway.
They all do when they kick you out of the
last scrotum. But not least, and
that's what they all do when they kick you out of the scrotum.
Last but not least, let's wind it up. You know the four shunt organs, the large intestine, heart, kidney, and gallbladder. They're in the four seasons of the year, and you can clean them up and keep them functioning to take the overload of your body. But you have one more thing to consider. Eating on time allows you to clean the body without being stressed out by it.
Yeah.
So, nature has provided its own automatic cleanup process. And there are only three foods that can clog you up. That's melted cheese, the fiber from the popcorn, and the carbon dioxide in the drink. Outside of that, you can get through everything on time. And there's only one style of cooking that the body doesn't accept. That's deep fry.
Like tempura?
Anytime you deep fry, you clog up your system. So for that reason, cleaning your intestinal tract with a colon irrigation around springtime is good for the body. And in the summertime, is you want to take some, make sure you're getting your tomato sauce juice with your blackstrap molasses for the heart. And in the autumn time, you can do a 2-day or a 3-day kidney flush. That is cranberry juice, 4 ounces of it. 4 ounces of corn oil. And you can do it for 3 days and clean out your kidneys. And once you've done it, you're doubtful you'll ever get it again because kidney stones are not that hard to recognize. They're only caused by mustard greens and collard greens eaten late at night. So, and if you eat pork fat with it, so you don't have much problem with that. The other one is gallstones, and they can only come from eating too much black pepper. And normally, today now, you can now avoid that by putting the black pepper, the whole peppercorn in a sack, put it in the food that you want to get the zinc out of it, and throw away the finished product. But all you do is put it in a little sack, and tie it and drop it in, and then let it boil, and all the zinc comes out. You got all the minerals you want, yeah.
What's a good combination to put the black peppercorn in like that for rice, pasta, or what?
Any food you want to give yourself the zinc from 12 midday to 7 o'clock at night. Nighttime you got enough zinc in your seaweed. Morning you got enough zinc in your middle of the day is the only one you want. Peppercorn. Put like 4 ounces of olive oil or 4 ounces of apple juice. Combine. That's in the winter time. The maximum is 7 days.
Adala, should you be careful what you eat the day after, like on Monday when you finish?
No, the thing is this. Whenever you go off of one of these programs, do not eat solid right away. You should always eat liquid, semi-blended up into like a porridge, and then finally back into the solid so that you can chew. So that's basically how you go back.
for taking the food back into your system, because your body has been temporarily reduced to liquid, less solid. So it's very natural to go back and easily start off with a soup, and you break the program, then go back to a porridge texture. If you've got vegetables, you blend them up in the blender and take it back. Then in a couple of days, then you're back to normal. You eat regularly. No problem.
Should you eat raw food the day before?
The day before you do a gallbladder flush?
Or any kind of a liquid thing?
You do it in a liquid form or a blend-up form, it's no problem.
Okay.
Make sure that it's not. Okay. Thank you. I understand. You got questions you want to ask? Go ahead, shoot them up. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Fire away.
We were talking about yesterday about the light, and it wasn't this morning. I can't recall, but I really liked it. You were talking about the white light. I'd like to know if some of your experiences with the white light, and maybe working with other people with light.
The light is inside of you already. All you got to do is sit down and watch it. So how long it takes to reveal itself, that's all you got.
Have you personally had it?
Me, I fall off a building to get mine. I'm hard-headed, I can't believe. So that's why I fall off a building and spend 50 minutes in the soil. So I died, and I made sure there ain't no devil sitting down waiting for me or no God waiting for dead people. But I found one thing about being dead. That nobody breathes you. And even though I saw the atoms inside of my head of light, I can't use it until I breathe. So from that standpoint, as a hard-headed son of a gun, I decided to pick up my body and live. So as far as my experience goes, I can't recommend it to nobody.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very, very honest.
But I have to go through it that way. But if you sit down and close your eyes, and you are persevering, eventually you will experience the internal journey of the sperm back to the ovum. We call that the death experience. There's no other death experience. Every other thing is just a bunch of geometry to interface or satisfy that particular memory. So if you think you're going up a tunnel, is your daddy throwing you out of the sperm, but you don't know it? And if you hear a voice talking, is when you make enough for mama. So you can shoot you out in the pile of fluid. You can't turn around and go back. And then you can see a big light up the road. That's the ovum waiting to bite you in the head. But you don't know it because your eyes can only see looking. It can't see what is. So since it only see what is in front and not what is, it doesn't recognize it as sperm moving out. But the memory is a journey of observation, right up to the light which represents the ovum. And the light is the mouth of the ovum locking down on the head as an ignition clamp. And you go through the mental anguish of being swirling and lost in the light, because you don't have any way to relate to what is called non-geometrical geometry. But a strange phenomenon will occur in there. You don't die.
Hey, how are you? This is Pete calling. We're hoping you guys would have
and you're here and see
NBA call me collect,
that you've always been atoms and that God has become you. You don't become God. and the you of you doesn't exist. But if you wake up and you don't panic from the experience, you'll feel horny all day. And if you do panic, the worst that can happen to you is fall asleep all through the time till next day. So the worst that can happen to you, you'll fall asleep and totally forget where you are. And the best that can happen is that you wake up and you're horny all over. So you're thrown back into the very same laws of physics. Go forth, Xerox yourself, and have dominion over the universe. If you go forth to Xerox yourself, that's what the horniness is all about. And dominion is, you're an adult, you can't be a child, because the experience, of course, is an adult body. So you're accepting living in the world, not running for it. Now, even Brother Jesus may be standing there looking at you while you come out of it. They're not going to breathe for you. In the end, you're going to say, what took me so long to wake up? But if you do understand it and you go through the journey of the sperm belonging with the ovum inside of your head, and you open your eyes and you look around, you're going to laugh. Why? You're breathing. If you aren't breathing, you'll be looking at your body lying on the bed, and everybody'll be crying all over you, and you'll be saying to them, but I ain't dead. I'm right over here. Don't you see me? And nobody will see you, but they'll do occasionally their face like that, because while you're talking, the air may be buzzing in their ears to make them feel kind of miserable, something in the cool air in the room, which is you, not my hot air, now turn cold air. They don't see you. They may feel you. And you're busy trying to explain that you are here. You want to talk to them. You're telling them, you haven't gone any place. You're here. And in the end, what? They'll bury the body, and they'll always come to pay respects to it, totally oblivious of you as popular standing in the room. But those that have eyes to see,
let them see.
Let them see and have ears to hear, let them hear. You know what they're going to do? If they see you, they're going to say, breathe. And if they hear you, they're going to say, breathe. So you realize you got a chance to start all over again in another body to breathe. So reincarnation is a guaranteed opportunity to breathe.
What about the thing called the ascension?
The ascension?
Mm-hmm.
What ascent? What ascent? The only thing that can ascend in you is the fact that you breathe and you don't rot.
Okay.
Then you ascend it.
Right.
If you breathe, they'll keep you. And if you don't rot, they'll keep you. But if you breathe and you don't leave the body for them to examine, they're going to be bugged. That's really applying the ascension. And if you appear to them and eat a little with them, and they photograph you no matter how they try, and it doesn't record, that really bugs the hell out of them. Then you can come and go at will and visit them. Then they say you're ascended. Where?
To a higher, a different sonic frequency, a different octave. I don't know.
Well, that's how we like to explain it to ourselves. We're better than those that we left behind, or we're worse than those we left behind, or we're the same. But we don't know. Those who we left behind don't know how to work it.
Well, it's like you say about the angels. There they are, and they would give everything they have to be able to breathe. So does the ascended master always be, they're always around us because we breathe?
If you met somebody...
Let's say Saint Germain, for
example. He does drive his own car?
I believe he does.
You don't drive your own car?
I don't know.
Then what is the difference when both you see the same car and got to go in? Who owns the car gets the right to drive it?
Well, I've got
it. In your car, you drive it, right?
Yeah.
In his car, he's doing what?
He's driving his.
So?
Just the difference of planes or geometry or sonics?
He drives his own car, you drive your own car, you're both drivers. But if he invites you into his car, are we going to be a passenger or a driver?
Well,
nine times out of ten, he ain't going to invite you into his car. Nine times out of ten, you're going to make the stupid attempt to invite him into your car.
That's true.
And then he's going to call in temporarily to prove to you what, that he exists. Then he says, don't call me back next time because I don't want to use your car. I got my own car. A lot of people I met, you know, they don't like me when I come around because why? I show that each man of his own car. So Saint Germain don't come around and nobody has a walk in to talk to me. Tell him this will happen.
Oh, yes. Once upon a time, we went to a seance type thing. And this spirit was talking to this man. He could contact various people, including he claimed he could get Rampa. So Adano had told me that no spirit could hang around when he came around. So right away, just at one time, he said, excuse me, can I ask a question? And the spirit said, certainly. Or the man talking in this voice, and had an altered voice, certainly. And Adano said, who are you? And he said, I am Rampa. Who are you? And Adano said, Adano. And the spirit said, I gotta go now. Came back. Exactly what he said. That was the whole conversation.
That's
I gotta go now.
He wasn't the driver of his own car, and he forced him to become the driver of his own car. It's like that, there, San Diego has this paper called The Reader, and there's this crazy guru called, what's that, Swami Beyond Ananda?
Yeah.
He says all these people are trying to have channeling the people coming into their bodies, and everyone who's seeking enlightenment is trying to leave theirs.
Well, see, some people want a free ride. Others want to be used as a free ride.
Instead of accepting the car.
Where's the merchant?
Probably be a clear advantage to talk you into leaving your body too, wouldn't it?
So, sure it would.
Time, right?
You see, they don't want to take the journey up the uterine canal. Because they're not in a carbon-based body. They're in a silicon or a sulfur-methane body. And the opportunity to experience breathing is a temporary condition of promising you they'll do something for you. And your ego will let go, temporarily shut down, and they use your body to experience breathing. So this is what we call using the other person's car without their permission. And so that's basically what you do. You leave them to be using your mechanism for them to feel comfortable that they can cope with a carbon-based body. But they can't hang around permanently no matter how they try. Where they can always periodically tap you to tell you they are wrong, and you'll always feel proud enough to say it, and so you leave yourself more and more weaker or vulnerable to let them in to tap in on you.
Sure.
So we're not here to condemn them.
Yeah.
All you did to yourself is make yourself a biological telephone booth for them. All they're doing is tapping on your breathing apparatus so they get adaptable to carbon dioxide going out of the body and oxygen coming in. So they get familiar that if they did decide to go up the uterine canal and really tap in, the familiarity of working on your body would give them the incentive. You already made the plunge.
We might have been there walking for a while before.
You don't know? I'm not going to say you might not have been, but the point is this. Suffered to be so, if we were or were not, right at this moment in time, understanding is the best friend and not belief. If you understand, you will stay healthy and you make it the butterfly hood. If you don't understand, then they use you until you feel fed up with them.
Yeah, that's the way that I got to like with the Summit Lighthouse, which I'm still like a member of. There's a woman who lives with her prophet. I've been to meetings since 1973, and I've heard 1,000 dictations from Gautama Buddha to Jesus, Archangel Michael, Mother Mary, Kuan Yin, Dua Kul. I've heard lots of dictations. I've got stacks of them. And like, I got to a point where I just said, you know, I looked around and I said, gee, I just don't feel like I really, you know, want this or something. It just didn't seem like I was really developing anymore. I felt, you know, why should I get answers from other people? like that. And it wasn't really doing me any good. So, mixing with someone else.
And so?
Well, no, I just try to go intuitively. I mean, you know, I use my own.
Well, ask yourself, if you try to be intuitive, is it to know tomorrow or to cope it now?
Right now.
Then if you cope it now, you don't need intuition. Who needs intuition if they're coping now? People who don't feel confident want to know tomorrow, so they seek intuition.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Is God breath or is God knowledge?
Understanding.
I haven't found God as knowledge.
So what's the understanding?
Understanding is the ability to turn the key in the car.
That's just the breath?
That's right.
We already have that.
Oh, then that tells you you have the right to drive the car. That's what they give you the key, they give you the certificate or the license, and they give you the car and the ownership and the bill, and you drive your car on your own.
What's the difference between the understanding you have and
the
understanding I have?
Self-understanding. I don't breathe for you, so what have you done now? You want to know tomorrow, or you want to live now?
You're a driver, he's a chauffeur and a mechanic.
Okay. I feel there comes a time, you know, all these masters in the story, there was a time that all of them stopped all the reading, and they all were whatever they were. I mean, you know, to the fullness of whatever they are work. I mean, they just didn't have a need for it.
No, they waited for us to accept what we are. And as soon as we accept what we are, they allow us to continue acting as we are.
They mean the elements?
Yeah.
Elements. They allow it.
And the individual form that you call a master is only your opportunity to realize where you are. Because nobody is your master, and the brother Jesus told you.
That's right.
You are your own master of what?
Self.
There's no self.
Of the elements, of the environment?
No, you're a master of breathing.
Oh.
Because nobody breathes for you. Now if you breathe, all the 144 elements that hold that body together keep what? Staying together. And if you don't breathe, the 144 elements will do what? Separate. So then what is your mastery other than to do what? Breathe to keep it together? Now when do you want to experience opportunity? Tomorrow or now? So then if you breathe now, the 144 elements allow you to experience what?
Well,
opportunity. Opportunity doesn't say what it is. It's unrehearsed already.
Right, yes, it is.
It's brand new. It's an opportunity to what?
Breathe.
To live. Yeah, to live. There's not to live. You breathe. And in breathing, you have the opportunity to act. And in order to act, you must cope with it. Not panic from it. So all life is action. There's no such thing as actionless life. All action. All action is love. See this love came in as a result of
there he is. Love himself.
He's reached fruition here, huh?
Right? And all love is service. And all service is giving. And all giving is freedom. And all freedom is now. And all now is life. And all life is action. So where are we going? Back right where we started. From our nose to our holes.
Okay.
Good, see? Action. The will make you have action. Look at that. Look at that. See any people are breathing already? Great.
Is there a specific way that you consciously breathe during the day that's different now than...
My friend... Do you breathe? Does somebody teach you to breathe? Or the air pushes itself through your nostril and allows you to stay alive?
Well, when I took yoga, and I had a yoga instructor, he told me that I was breathing all wrong. And he was just trying to teach me how to breathe diaphragmatically.
And
he said I wasn't breathing right. And I never could get it, so I just gave up on it. I said, I can't do this, and I just breathe the way I breathe. I don't even know if it's right or wrong. I'm just breathing. Well, I'm fine. I don't have pneumonia. I feel good. I can run.
So what do you try to tell you?
I think he's full.
No, he was trying to tell you, stop thinking about it. And so when you stop thinking of it, your body did it.
Maybe so. Maybe
no, not maybe so. That's what everybody's got to learn sooner or later, that the person who teaches the knowledge isn't teaching you anything that they themselves didn't learn. But the only way they can make you do it is what? Make you feel stupid. That's the best way to learn.
And you stop thinking.
Yeah, when you feel stupid, you quit. Interfering with your ability to do it right. You've been always doing it right, but you're blocking it by thinking you got to do it right.
Yeah.
And in actuality, when you think you got to do it right, you block it.
That's how people solve problems.
Right. So if I tell them, oh, you're lousy, then they say, oh my God. Well, that's exactly the technique they use. You quit worrying about how to do it right, you end up doing it right.
Yeah, Zen masters do that all the time.
So why, now you see the call of Zen
master.
Well,
a
Zen whatever.
That was from the other songs out.
You know where the word comes from?
I was just reading to see who the name was.
The zenith of anything is what?
The highest point.
The highest point of anything is to stop talking. As long as you keep talking, you haven't arrived yet.
We've got plenty here.
When you arrive, you don't talk.
90 minutes each.
And when you don't talk, you live. And when you live, you breathe.
6 hours.
And when you breathe, you yawn. And when you yawn, you swallow. And when you swallow, you laugh.
Okay.
And then you always feel
nothing
better than a jackass. You know, a jackass is always laughing in the world.
Starts at 5 p.m.
What song does a jackass make?
Oh, 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 oh.
Congratulations. See that?
Yeah. You want to go
it's known as the all part.
You should punch an actual
really.
Down, and then
you
get to little
so that's the end of the joke, and we all begin to do what? Fart through our mouths, breathe through our nose, enjoy our ears, and trickle
you
our
go left on next, then you go down, you go left
and
little
big boys will tell you, be like little kids.
Okay, little field.
Your daddy don't
left
want
field,
any upright,
right
know it all jerk. He already know it all, so you're going to tell him you know it all.
E-R-B-Y.
Why don't you enjoy, let him enjoy himself being a jerk and a baby boy inside of himself. But our parents don't like that, because why?
Yes.
They were forced to educate you,
yep.
Make sure that you know how to function, and therefore you're going to be respected.
Yeah.
And then when you turn out to be a super deluxe baby boy or girl,
okay.
They feel they got left out.
I don't think so. Huh? Be
like one of these. One of these means like a kid. Having no ego, full of curiosity.
That is fun.
They don't like it because they don't get enough. See, fun enough. How much fun can you get enough of? Can you get enough of? You never get enough of fun because it's enough.
Now we're back to the tickle.
Yeah, right, back to the tickle. There you go. But you see, the thing is so comical. What's comical about it is that now it doesn't have tomorrow. Now it doesn't think of tomorrow.
And no makes you feel what? Incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know what's coming up to test you.
Well, I feel pretty tough right now.
But do you feel safe enough?
I do. Very much right now.
Right now I do.
Enjoy it.
I love learning these things.
Enjoy yourselves later than you think. Enjoy yourselves, they never get pink. The years go by, they almost fill the drink. Enjoy yourselves before they stink. And they stink, don't blame nobody. Blame yourselves.
Donna, what's the difference between being afraid and being scared?
Ah, my friend. Afraid is to worry before it happens. Scared is taken by surprise that you may cope or you may not cope.
Afraid is like they live a rope all apart.
But I'd rather be scared than afraid. Because I don't know and I'm taken by surprise if my ability to cope or not to cope, if I get my ego out of the way, I may come out a winner. If I get my ego in the way, I may end up a loser. So I'd rather take a gamble with being scared than afraid. Knowing that prior to being scared, I coped. And if I cope, now I'm still around to cope with more scare. Therefore, I ain't worried anymore if anything comes up to harass me. But if I'm afraid, I'll be digging a hole to crawl in, never finding out what the hell is making me afraid.
I need iron.
So for that matter, I take what Brother Jesus says. The peace I give, the world don't give. The world gives you 6 feet under the ground and you're afraid you're not going to get by, so you crawl in and lie down and die. And if I'm scared because Brother Jesus says he gave me the power to cope with it, so whatever it happens, that's how I live the moment. So I live the moment this way. I don't know if it's going to come or not. Then I got to worry if my pants going to get wet or not. That's the whole essence. So you test yourself every day if you fart or you piss. Between which one of the two will come out.
Mm-hmm.
Now if you didn't fart, you may piss. And then you really goof it. If you didn't piss, you may fart. But if you didn't fart or piss and a lump of load came out,
Lordy.
Ah, well, that's the name of the game. But you know you're testing yourself every second. So test yourself. Don't be afraid to test yourself.
What did you say about class I went to? You said like when you raise your hands and you like this, that's a form of like, I don't know, you said something about that.
Yeah?
Defense or some aggressive behavior.
You're testing yourself.
When you do this, you stand and you walk into a room and, oh, I know, people aren't sure you're coming into a room, so just inadvertently you just stand in the back like people hang on, you just...
Off the lights start back.
Now, what does that do with
you? That straightens out your frequency.
That's it. You
line up the
cope and take off.
Right, so people...
Enjoy it. Congratulations. After all, you've been on a comfortable.
Taking all this.
You know what's happening to you, big brother?
Confrontation.
I'm going to stick around until Tuesday.
What's happening with you?
How are you going to get from me and Diane?
Well, since speaking, I went to the beach today before I came here. Some of these beaches, you had to walk down these cliffs in order to get down. So when Fernando asked you about being afraid and scared, when I got halfway down, and then I became afraid because the footing was real unsure, and all it takes is one little slip with your foot and you don't walk down, you go rolling down. And I was watching people go down these cliffs with surfboards and all sorts of things they were carrying, and I would watch them, and you could see every foot they took, they were really being very careful. And I had this backpack on my back, and I just said, the heck with it. I threw it down the hill, and I just said, I want to balance this by myself. But I felt really fortunate I made it down, because I was really afraid that I was going to perhaps roll down the cliff. So I found somebody down there below on the beach, and found a better way to go back up. I didn't want to risk my luck on the way back up.
Interesting, huh?
But I mean, I was afraid. I was one. You didn't have any margin for error. There's no room for mistake there at all. And the people, you could see when they put their foot down, they would try to see if it would be stable. And there's no way of knowing it was going to be stable after they put pressure on it because it's all sandy. And I kind of believe these people walking down. They must have had great balance. One little slip, and they'd be in a hospital. So I just enjoyed the beach. I haven't went to the beach for a while.
Point out something else to you. You didn't do it yesterday. You did it today.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody was to tell you a month ago, on a Sunday, you'd be coming down a mountain, would you accept it? Not knowing what type of condition the mountain was?
Perhaps I would, perhaps I wouldn't, I don't know. It depends on the timing or the conditions, or who said it to me.
So now, think of one moment. If all the details of today were written a month ago and handed to you when you came down the mountain, step by step, what would you say?
If you said it to me, or someone else said it
to me? No, somebody else said it to you.
I would...
There's some contagious
feeling. Perhaps not believe it.
Toxins coming out.
I don't believe it when I see it. And go through it.
It took me a little while to get my courage up to go down this path. I saw people, I watched a little bit, observed some people go down and come up, and I won't go down it again, that's for sure.
Friend.
Yeah?
Timing of the daily events in your life is the evidence that creative intelligence directs your existence. So you cannot relive no instant in your life that you know of twice. And as long as you're breathing at this moment, every other instant that you live is intended to be lived. It could be worse. Never to have the chance or muck it up in the process. But you live. The most important moment of your life, walking down a mountain.
So with that, Miss Kibar,
are you leaving us already?
Here again.
Good seeing you.
Good seeing you.
And kisses and hugs, everybody. Right.
Sure.
See you later.
Bless you. Bye.
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 I just surprised why people would want to take that chance. To me, it didn't seem worth it, because there's no margin for any mistake. So one little mistake, and then your body is going to be all bruised up.
Well, look at it another way.
I mean, it doesn't seem worth it. There's easier ways to get down besides that one particular way.
One leaves, one comes in. Well, hi there.
There's Liza. All right.
Do I know you?
No.
I've met you. Good to see you.
Hi, Liza.
Hello.
You look bitter.
Yeah. The question is, my friend, it is not if you do it or you don't do it. That moment of time came. for you to live.
But that moment, why would that moment be different from any other moment?
No two moments are the same. Show me how.
Yeah, but each moment gives you an opportunity to live. In that respect, why would one moment be different from the other?
Mm-hmm. Each opportunity to live is a different experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, when the time is for you to experience walking down a mountain, you'll walk down it. When the time for you to climb up a fiery pole, you'll climb up it. When the time for you to plunge in the water to bump your head against a rock, you'll do it. When the time for you to come out in a pile of grass and lie down and enjoy the sun, you'll do it. But not before it presents itself. Even though maybe precariously arranging itself to occur, you will always live it at the moment. Now, did you expect to be in San Diego on a Sunday afternoon to see some slant-eyed guy in the month of August?
Not until I spoke to it.
That's what we're talking about, the moment. See what I'm talking about? Each moment has its own particular opportunity.
Took me 14 years to learn how to play in the windsurf. On the windsurf for 14 years. It's ridiculous. Some people learn it in 4 months, and I tried.
And if you look back, this fella here went into winter yesterday. Went tomorrow into spring and came back today in summer.
Yeah.
That's a fast journey he made.
He hasn't lost the ability to fart.
Think of that. He went back into winter yesterday. And he went forward into spring tomorrow. And he returned here in summer today. Look how fast he went around the universe in three different seasons. Yesterday, tomorrow, and today. He already went tomorrow. And he came back today. We are always going there, but there is always where your nose is.
So how can you go there already if gone tomorrow?
Well, that's what I said. He went where his nose is, and that's where he has to go, there.
You said he went there
yesterday,
tomorrow.
Yesterday into winter. Uh-huh. He went in tomorrow as spring.
How could you go winter?
And he came back today as summer.
Tomorrow.
Yesterday, then tomorrow. Yesterday, fall. Tomorrow
followed yesterday,
and then that
proceeded
today.
That's what he's saying. Yeah. Not that tomorrow.
It's on the safari. Yesterday. I mean, tomorrow
from yesterday. Yeah. That's what I
don't
thought.
Believe you.
Right? They don't believe
you. I know.
He knows it's winter in Australia.
Yeah, but it's winter every day, every night.
Did you know that the word breathe has more combinations of words than any other word I've ever seen in my life? You've got it there and I've been looking at it for the past 6 hours. The word breathe has be at the theater in it. It says eat the air. It says he be at the beat or beat the whatever it was. I'm doing words with it. Those letters in the word breathe form many, many different words.
Except one word.
Well,
go. Well, it doesn't
have an element. It
doesn't
have a lot. It just forms a lot of words.
It'll form any word except one word.
Now.
Yeah.
It will form every word except one word.
Failure? Thank you. Right. If you breed, you are what?
A winner.
A winner. Congratulations. If you don't breed, there you start over again.